Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back into the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson. And now, as we prepare, you know, we are moving through the midseason, sort of resetting everything. First BCS standings are out. We're 7 weeks into the season. And so we're going to have, it is time for another Heisman cast. So I would like to welcome back to the podcast Mr. Chris Houston, our Heisman pundit and Heisman expert. Chris, how are you doing today? Do you feel like the Heisman race has changed dramatically from Geno Smith's blowout loss against Texas Tech?
Well, first of all, I want to say hello to everyone out there in podcast land. It's great to be back again at the midway point. It's been a great first half of the season. It's been fun coming on here with Chip. As for his question with regards to Geno Smith, I think it's going to affect him somewhat. As far as the present perception of the race. But I think that in the long run, this particular game won't hurt him as long as he still performs well in the second half. And, you know, of course, the big question mark is how will he perform in the second half, in particular this upcoming game on Saturday against Kansas State in Morgantown. So that will be his next challenge. It's pretty much been a tough gauntlet for him, if you think about it. Two straight road trips to Texas for West Virginia, and that's, you know, one of these issues that people hadn't talked about was school, you know, over on the close to the East Coast, having to travel all the way to Texas for road games. So they went back-to-back to Austin and Lubbock. After coming off a win over Texas, they had an emotional win there. And then, you know, they kind of probably came out flat against Texas Tech. And now they've got to bounce back again against Kansas State. But at least they're at home, and he's got a chance to kind of put things right.
Yeah, it's freaking out and trying to suggest that he peaked too early or suggesting that his Heisman chances are done. And in my opinion, it is ignoring the fact that it's not one person. You know, you don't live or die. You still have to select a group of finalists, and you still have to beat out other people. And it's also ignoring the fact that a lot of players in the past who have been Heisman Trophy winners have had these bad games. And they've even been at this time in the season, and they've even been against conference opponents.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have a propensity to fight the last war, so to speak. And you see that a lot, like in things like the presidential election. I mean, we were told that debates don't really matter. They don't move the needle very much because, past debates didn't do it. And the big first debate did that, you know, for Romney, and now it's a new race. But the same thing with the Heisman Trophy, you know, because in the last few years there hasn't been too many Heisman winners sort of, you know, coming off to a good start and, you know, kind of wrapping things up early. There's been a lot of late-breaking Heisman winners. You know, people sort of develop this meme that, well, you know, the Heisman isn't won in September or October, it's won in November. Well, it depends. It depends on the race, and every race is different. As I mentioned today on my latest column, you know, you can't get any later than Jason White having a horrible game against Kansas State in 2003 and losing that game, yet he still won the Heisman pretty solidly over Larry Fitzgerald. So, you know, there's every race is different. A lot goes into it. It's all about how each player is compared relative to the players who are competing against him. And I still think that when all is said and done, if you look at the long run of the race versus the present moment, you have to favor West Virginia's Geno Smith because he's going to have great numbers at the end of the year, and I think they'll be a pretty decent team when it's all said and done as well.
And that was one thing that we talked about from the very beginning that was going to be benefiting Geno Smith is the fact that he's not relying on solely his team's performance as far as the way that the Heisman voters are looking at him. I mean, he is still riding these incredible statistics. He still hasn't thrown an interception. It's, I mean, a 25-0 touchdown to interception ratio at this point in the season. You know, he still gets to fill that role as the statistics, as the over the top fantastic performance guy. How many more games if they lose to Kansas State? You know, it obviously will depend on how he performs, but how much more margin for error is there now that there was that one blowout where, you know, he was only able to really, except for that one late game touchdown, that's only really one strong touchdown drive by the offense.
Right. I think if he plays poorly in a loss to Kansas State, his Heisman hopes are in critical condition, but not necessarily, gone. I do think if he plays well at a loss, I think he's still probably in solid shape. Although it's, you know, it will be a situation where he's going to have to really grind it out the rest of the year and finish strong. I do think that in a kind of perverse way, what we've seen from the West Virginia defense these last few weeks has kind of helped him, because I think, you know, people realize that, hey, he needed all of those 8 touchdowns to beat Baylor. That's how bad West Virginia's defense is. And what you saw in the loss to Texas Tech was a situation where he didn't throw 8 touchdown passes, and they lost by that much. So, I mean, it's almost like he shouldn't have to throw 7 touchdown passes every game in order for his team to win. And I think that, you know, what we saw against Texas Tech was, yeah, he didn't have a great game, but even if he had had a great game, he still might have lost. And it's just one of those things where if he can show that his team can go 10-2 or 9-3 despite having a really atrocious defense, that might really reflect well on him to the Heisman voters.
What's the what are the chances that we have, and you did hint on this, and so be sure if you're tuning in that you double back and check out Chris's Heisman notes from Monday. But, you know, the Johnny Manziel is already to the point where he's breaking his own SEC records. And to me, there can't be more of a – I'm almost kind of rooting for him as a fan of chaos, that there's a freshman, B, he's at Texas A&M in Texas A&M's first SEC season, and so you've got a freshman quarterback from Texas A&M who's shattering these SEC records, which, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of older alumni that may not like Texas A&M's presence anyway, and then the fact that somebody like Johnny Football is breaking the records. I love it, but how much has his outstanding performance reverberated as far as, you know, the possibility of his name being included as a finalist but when it comes time to select people to go to New York?
Well, I think he's starting to make real headway. I think this game against Louisiana Tech, you know, the fact that Louisiana Tech was ranked at the time, and this wasn't just some throwaway gimme game, and it was, you know, the last game of the night, really, that everyone was watching, and it was just this dominating performance, an exciting performance. And he's got the nickname, and he's doing it, you know, he's going to be doing it against SEC teams here for the next few years in this season. And you know, it's just, this might be a perfect storm for him, because I've talked a lot about the stats guy. You know, Geno Smith is the stats guy. Well, Johnny Manziel also has a chance to be a stats guy, because he's on pace for 48 total touchdowns. He's on pace for a 3,000 yard passing season and a 1,000 yard rushing season. And I think that's only been done by a few guys in college football, and Vince Young being the first, I believe. So, you know, you have that happen as just a freshman in your first season in the SEC. You know, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, I would guarantee he would go to New York in those circumstances. Now, I've been a big believer that freshmen can't win the Heisman, you know, and like I said in my column, I'm willing to entertain the notion that I'm wrong, and would actually think it would be great if I was wrong, because, you know, we'd sort of see a new climate in the Heisman race with, you know, the advent of social media and all the factors that come into publicizing freshmen, which have improved over the years. But, you know, one of the main problems with freshmen is the fact that they are freshmen. They're in their first year. Johnny Manziel has played 6 games. You know, Geno Smith has started 32 games in his career. So we know more about Geno Smith than we do about Johnny Football. But, you know, Johnny Football is catching up with when you come out and have 570 yards of total offense, you can catch up pretty quick. Now, the big test is LSU coming up this Saturday. There's another chance to sort of advance the legend that's emerging. And then, you know, I tell you what, if he leads an upset of Alabama, has a great game, I think he wins the Heisman. And I'll say that right here and right now. You know, I think that's that perfect situation. He comes out, upsets the number 1 team, does what he does, which is like D Dallas combined with, you know, a great passer, then I think he can win it.
Where do you – I know you get into like sort of scouting and player breakdowns, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see in Johnny Manziel that you draw comparisons to?
Well, yeah, he reminds me – the way he runs, he reminds me of his former Air Force quarterback in the late 80s named D. Dallas. I don't know if you remember him, Chip. He was a electric type of water bug runner. And what I like about Manziel is that he recognizes so quickly when he has to run and where he has to run. It's almost like there's like almost no hesitation, and he kind of, it's like he thinks 10 yards ahead. So he reminds me of him as far as the running aspect and just the passing aspect, you know, everything else kind of that, it's almost like that Doug Flutie, Fran Tarkin kind of vibe I get from him. You know, he's just really exciting. And he just seems to, you know, to be able to do what he wants.
Yeah.
And to do it at that age is incredible. And it's something you rarely see even for a senior.
It's so perfect for Kevin Sumlin and Kingsbury. And it may be on me, but did we know that he was going to be like this 2 years ago? You know, is this a breakout, or are there people who have seen this type of performance coming, or even this early?
Tell you what, he's a guy that, you know, totally was under my radar. I hadn't even heard of the guy until they named him the starter. But, you know, I had heard that they liked him during his freshman redshirt season, that, you know, that he was an exciting player, that they expected a lot of him, that he was very athletic. And, you know, you hear a lot about that kind of chatter from guys when they're redshirting, and then coaches say that about a lot of guys. Well, wait till you see this guy. And, you know, and it doesn't always turn out right. So I think some of that was, you know, a healthy dose of skepticism. But this was a guy I did not look at in high school. I looked at a lot of guys coming up to the ranks just because I'm always trying to keep an eye on who might, you know, be a future contender for the Heisman, or just who might be a great player, period.
Right.
And I for some reason, and I believe he was committed to Oregon originally, which would really make sense. But I believe I just did not see him coming, and here he is.
Yeah, he certainly made it known. I mean, I like players that are fun, and he's just electric. I mean, he's one of those, he's a gamer. And like you said, it does. I like Waterbug style running, by the way. Can I steal that at some point in the future?
Absolutely.
Really is a great description of it, exactly what he does, and being able to recognize when the play is going to break down before the play is even broken down.
I like how I've seen plays with, you know, where he's had this year where he's run 50 yards, but like there's been stretches where he's run backwards. You know, he's run like 80 yards to get 50 a few times. And it's like, you remember, you know, those old NFL film tapes of Fran Tarkin and kind of running, and you think for a while that he's going the wrong way. And then you forget that he remembers that it's the other way he should be going. And then he ends up riding himself, and then he ends up, you know, getting by guys. And I've seen that a few times with him, and I've been like, wow, that's just like, it's almost like he's Pistol Pete Maravich out there.
Well, it doesn't happen anymore. As fast as the game's gotten, it is so rare that you see a quarterback beyond, you know, grainy high school YouTube tapes being able to do that.
Yeah, it just seems really weird, and it's really fun to watch. Pretty much, you know, I want to make sure that TV's on when A&M's playing now, and you know, it's really going to be interesting to see if he can, you know, keep up this standard the next 3 or 4 years.
You know, another player, I know this is somebody, you've written about how much you enjoy keeping the TV on when Colin Klein and Kansas State is playing right now. I guess he's sort of moved in. Are you expecting, you still say Geno Smith, you know, with everything that he has going for him by the end of the season, you know, still will emerge out in front. How much traction has Colin Klein gotten in this race just by being able for Kansas State to continue winning?
He's gotten a lot. I think he's in, you know, tomorrow's Heisman Pundit CBS straw poll that comes out. He's going to be a very close second to Geno Smith. So, you know, what a cross section of the Heisman voters are thinking now is that Geno Smith is still leading, but Colin Klein is right there, you know, close behind him. And it's pretty appropriate because, you know, they're going to be playing this Saturday. So, we'll be able to get a compare and contrast situation between the two. But Colin Klein, I think the combination of Kansas State just being back, being good, being highly ranked, and just his style of play where, you know, you can't really put a finger on what he does or how he does it, but he just kind of does it. And he's exciting in his own fashion just because, you know, he's one of the few players I've ever seen where it's like I can almost – you know, you look at a player and you can see how big they are, you can see how tall they are and how fast they are. I feel like I can see how much he wants it when he plays, or how you know, his pure will of wanting to win or get a few yards, or, you know, on a key situation. I can see that like a spiritual thing hanging over him when I watch a game. So it's kind of weird. He just seems to do whatever he wants when he needs to, in the same way Manziel does.
Yeah, when we were filling out our ballots for the CBSSports.com midseason awards, I had Geno Smith as the quarterback on my midseason All-American team under the thinking that he is the best quarterback, but the best offensive player, I selected Colin Klein. And I think that it's his consistency, too. He's just brought this very, very high level of play. I mean, for most of the last two seasons, really? I mean, he's been performing at this sort of same level, and the way that the rest of the team has been playing, the way that defense has been playing, and yeah, they got that big win at Oklahoma. Maybe they caught Oklahoma at the right time. Maybe they're that good. But as the team continues to be undefeated, they're sitting right there, you know, right on the edge of the top five. I think, you know, if they can beat West Virginia, which at this point right now, off the top of my head, I haven't really broken it down. Who would you pick? I think I'd pick Kansas State to win this game on Saturday.
I think I'd give Kansas State the slight edge, but I'm still not completely certain, because I look at, you know, you're looking at, you know, this this force of sheer will in Colin Klein with kind of the precision engineering of that West Virginia offense playing at home in comfy confines, you know, with a loud crowd and just, you know, knowing every inch of that field and every sight line of that stadium. This is Kansas State's first, you know, trip up there. And, you know, it's just, you know, I'm not going to count West Virginia out here. I think that it's too soon to say, you know, and also, you know, West Virginia's problem is that their secondary is horrible. And I don't think they'll be as stressed as much against Kansas State, in the secondary. So I think there's a chance. You know, I'm going to go with, I think West Virginia's going to win. I'll just say that. I think they're going to bounce back. Why not? I'll go with West Virginia.
In sort of the way that the Big 12 has played out, we knew that it was going to be tough to be able to get through the conference schedule for any team. And in the same way that Geno Smith has, while he certainly might have taken a little bit of a dip as far as how strong his support is, like in your Heisman Pundit straw poll, you know, I think that Kansas State could lose this game at Morgantown and Colin Klein still very much be in the hunt.
No, I agree. I think he's sort of the MVP candidate in the race, and it's a situation where no one expects Kansas State to go undefeated this year. They'll be really shocked if they do. They'll be one of the stories of the year in college football. But if they go 11-1 and win the Big 12, then I think they'll also be, you know, highly lauded. So I think he's in the race to stay. I think he's a guy that is very likable. And, you know, one of the things that really strikes me about him, and one of the reasons I like him so much, is that I remember watching him in 2010. And I think that was Snyder's first year back. And they were just – he was just – I thought he was awful. But he was just big, clunky clodhopper, just a guy who couldn't, you know, if you think his throwing motion's bad now, it was absolutely atrocious then. And even his running, you know, he's still not extremely fast. He's fast for his size, but back then he didn't seem very coordinated. And I just remember thinking, and he wasn't a full-time starter, they had Kaufman as well, and I remember thinking, like, who is this guy? This guy shouldn't be playing. And then all of a sudden, the next year, he comes out and he's like a completely different player.
Right.
And he's just continued to improve, and now he's just like the dominant force in college football, and it's really neat to watch.
Yeah, I think he has taken another big step forward, especially like you talked about his throwing motion in 2010. Last year was, you know, the gritty defense, they come up with the turnover at the right time, the Snyder magic. I mean, but Kansas State was winning games in which they were getting outgained last year, and I think that that other step forward has been that improvement in his ability to keep that offense balanced, not just a ball control rushing attack.
Right. No, I agree. I think he's completing a lot more of his passes now. He's definitely – he got the touch, and he wants to be a good passer. I talked to him last week. You know, great guy, very polite. Seems to be really focused. You know, he's a married guy, so he's very mature. He's not, you know, I don't think he's, you know, looking for the crazy lifestyle of a big ball and football player. So I think he just wants to improve and you know, get his team more wins. And he seems to, like I told him, you know, when I watched him against Oklahoma on that 3rd-and-2 to seal the game, there was, you know, little doubt in my mind that he was going to get that. And there's very few players I look at and have that kind of confidence in.
Yeah. Let's also look, because before we move on, I also want to ask you about Braxton Miller and EJ Manuel. Before we do, has the race really sort of been constricted a little bit at this point in the season, or is it still, or is there still enough time that you think there are there is a player who could explode and still be able to have an impact with the Heisman voters?
Well, I think there's three players who really have a legitimate chance of winning, and that's Smith, Klein, and Braxton Miller. There's kind of the oddball pick in Johnny Football, who, you know, who if he overturns all the rules of Earth, Wind, and Fire, can win the Heisman, but it's going to take a lot to happen. Obviously, you've got to.
No, I think it's an Alabama win, or you know, an LSU and everything else but Alabama. But you're right. It's for him. Yeah. This is going to be the best resume year ever, unless he's able to do one of those things.
Yeah, it has to be incredible. And then you have, you know, maybe DeAnthony Thomas, but he's going to have to do something incredible the last half of the year if he's really fallen off. You know, here's a dirty little secret of the CBS Sports Heisman page, is that when I put others to watch, it's only because I have to, because of the way the page is coded. I would not put EJ Manuel there if I had my druthers, because there are required to be at least two guys on that. So I picked EJ Manuel because he did have a good game last week, and looks like he might be, you know, pumping up his numbers a bit. So I really think there's three super legitimate candidates who can win, and there's two guys on the outside looking in.
Yeah, that's what does Braxton Miller have to do to be able to win the Heisman Trophy? Because this is an interesting situation where how many times, and I'm sorry if I'm asking you a question that you might not have the
no
answer
worries.
For in front of you, but how many times has there been a Heisman even finalist for a team that was on probation with the NCAA?
Well, we had a guy actually win the Heisman in 1989, Andre Ware. Houston was on probation, and they went 9-2 that year.
That's right. I'd forgotten about that. Good call, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. That's why I'm here. that's why they paid me the big bucks to come up with this minute weird Heisman information. But Andre Ware, the team was 9-2 for Houston. He had incredible numbers. They played their last game, I believe, in Tokyo or somewhere, and he wasn't actually at the Heisman ceremony. But he did beat out. It was an exceptionally weak field that year. Number two that year was Anthony Thompson of Indiana, who ran about a 4.8 40, a very bad field that year. So he did win it. So there was a precedent. I think with Braxton Miller, again, it's going to sort of come down to how the different parts relate to each other in this race. If he goes 12-0, or if Ohio State goes 12-0, he's going to have a pretty compelling case that he's kind of the MVP of college football, because that's not really a team laden with dynamic downfield threats. He is the downfield threat. He's kind of the guy doing it all, and he's doing it in his first year in an offense, of Urban Meyer, that, you know, is an acclaimed offense. So, and he's doing it for traditional power, which is a huge factor when it comes to the Heisman, and, you know, obviously West Virginia and Kansas State are not traditional powers. But he's on pace for 34 total touchdowns. Incidentally, Colin Klein is also on pace for 34 total touchdowns. So I think in the end, for him to win, it would take Smith declining dramatically here in the next half of the season, and then both in his numbers and, you know, maybe a couple more losses. And then for Colin Klein to drop a game. But I think if Braxton Miller and Ohio State are undefeated, and he's got, you know, 2,300 passing yards and 1,500 rushing yards, and he has, you know, 35 or 40 touchdowns, he's going to be a compelling figure for a lot of Heisman voters out there.
How many Heisman voters do you think are going to look at Kansas State and West Virginia and almost either consciously or subconsciously eliminate one of the candidates from their mind, at least as the true front runner, when that game is over on Saturday night? Because it's a Fox game. It's a primetime game. It seems to me like one of the, you know, five or 10, possibly one of the 5 or 10 games that will be looked at under a microscope when Heisman voters are trying to decide who they're going to put in what order.
Yeah, I agree. It's really a shame that West Virginia couldn't have beaten Texas Tech last week, because then we would have had just probably the game of the week, if not one of the games of the year right there. I think it's going to be – I don't think that the loser is not going to go to New York. I think the loser will probably still go to New York. I think it depends on how the loser loses, which will determine things. I think Colin Klein has more to lose if he loses that game when it comes to the Heisman. I think if Smith – plays really well, you know, if it's a shootout, it's 42, if they lose 42-38 and he throws 5 touchdown passes, but his defense, you know, can't hold it for him, then I think he'll acquit himself well. Let's recall that last year, Robert Griffin III lost back-to-back games.
Right.
But he still played well in them, or at least he put up numbers in them. You know, as long as the overall trajectory of his resume at the end of the season is still maintained. You know, even the loss, one of the positives of the loss to Texas Tech was he didn't throw an interception. If he comes out of next week still not throwing an interception, you're 7 games into the year and maybe he's at a 28-0 ratio because he threw 3 touchdown passes. And it's a loss, but at the end of the year, they're 9-3 and people look at his numbers and he's got, 49 touchdown passes and 2 interceptions. That's like pretty crazy. That number just pops out at me. You know, and if there's no other alternative that really pops out at you, you're looking at a guy who is going to be again playing his games in the Southwest and his schools in the Mid-Atlantic region. So you're looking at a guy who's very strong when it comes to the regions of the Heisman book.
Outside of the but before we get you out of here, I want to send you out on this one. Outside of the very short list, as you've said, the 3 players who you think realistically, can win this Heisman Trophy this year. Who are some other players, almost other like Johnny Manziel types that have jumped out at you where perhaps you're like, you know what, at this time next year, we might be talking about that guy?
Well, I still think you have guys like, De'Anthony Thomas isn't going anywhere after this year. I think he's still going to be a factor of heading into the future, Heisman races. I think you've got I'm on the spot here.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. I think Trev Driscoll of Florida is really showing signs of improvement. He's going to be he'll be a junior next year on a traditional Heisman power that he's going to be, pretty talented guy who can run and pass and put up good numbers as he develops. I think he's definitely a factor. I think the Georgia running backs, Todd Gurley, Keith Marshall, are both 2 guys to look at in the future. I guess look at Marcus Mariota of Oregon as being a factor, as being a possible future Heisman contender. These are all guys I think who are going to be Blake Bell of Oklahoma once he gets the full starters numbers under his belt. He's going to be a monster. So these are all guys who are going to be big factors in coming Heisman races, I think.
He is Chris Houston. You can follow him on Twitter at Heisman Pundit. And, of course, check out all of his Heisman coverage on the Heisman Watch at CBSSports.com as well as on HeismanPundit.com. Chris, thank you so much once again. And if it's okay with you, we'll do it again in 2 weeks to check back in and see how things have changed again. See what the voters are thinking.
Yeah, I think by then we'll have a pretty good idea of what's going down. I think as more data comes in and as we see what these guys can do, I think we'll have a pretty good lockdown pretty early on who's going to win the Heisman.
I think so too. So be sure to tune in to find out. And remember that you can check out all of our CBSSports.com Ion College Football blog material by following us on Twitter at IonCFB or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/IonCollegeFootball. For Chris Houston, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for tuning in.